You're listening to Radio Caravan with host Scott Hayes, healthy lifestyle coach Jill Harvey, and sound engineer April Johnson.
Come on.
All right, good morning, Laguna. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan, and we've been on a hiatus. We've been on a hiatus for a couple of weeks, and so we're back with sort of a new structure, a new format that we're still sort of tweaking, but we've got some interesting musical guests coming in this morning that I'll share with you in just a moment. We've got about, 10 people in the room right now. Hey, Radio Caravan, by the way, is on Cox TV, Channel 3. We reach a potential 250,000 viewers tonight, 8 p.m. This is tonight, Saturday, 8 p.m., and tomorrow, 12 noon, on Cox Channel 3. And this weekend's guest is Tony Tetro, he claims to be the world's most famous art forger. Let me put it that way. He'll hate it when he hears that I said that. But Jill Harvey's here in the room as well. Jill, were you here when we interviewed Tony? I don't remember.
I was not, no.
Yeah, was anybody in the room here when we interviewed Tony? He's an interesting guy. He got arrested for art forgery. He went to jail for about a year. Back creating watches and traveling and just a really interesting storyteller.
There's a little
bit of the BS in him, though. So take that into consideration when you watch the show tonight. So we also have in the room Jill Harvey, of course, as I mentioned. We have engineer April Johnson. Good morning, April.
Good morning.
There she is. I'm not sure the mic's on.
There we go. Good morning.
That sounds better. We have intern Katie Fetter. Somebody knocking at the door. They can come in if they want. And, of course, our film crew, Corey Cyrus and Nick. Katie, we're going to start with you this morning, young lady. You're going to give us the about town. What's happening in the local community this weekend? You ready to rock and roll on this?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
All right, so since it's October, we have Oktoberfest going on in North and South Orange County.
Okay.
There's one going on at Old Town in Huntington Beach.
Beautiful.
And that one's 21 and over for the weekends. And then at Sea Terrace Park in Dana Point, that one will be going on as well all month of October.
Very nice. You're very high-tech, by the way, with the cell phone there for your...
Yeah, I didn't have time to write it
all down. I've got the old-fashioned paper.
Sorry. And tomorrow night, actually, at the Verizon Amphitheater in Irvine, we have Kings of Leon playing with Young the Giant.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you were saying something earlier that the lead singer, what now?
Yeah, Young the Giant's lead singer is actually from Irvine.
Really?
And he went to, I think, University High School.
Well, we should get him on the show.
Yeah, that would be cool.
We'll have to reach out to him.
All right, let's do that. And at Soka University, we have the Lion's Roar coming up on Saturday, October 18th, and that is free for all high school juniors and seniors, and that is kind of an event that we have at Soka that kind of, showcases what Soka is all about. We have performances from student clubs. We feed them lunch and everything in our dining hall, so it's a really personal event, and it's super fun, and that's actually an event I went to that kind of convinced me that Soka was the right school for me.
Yeah, beautiful. So, and this is your senior year.
Senior year.
You're studying
yes.
what again?
Liberal arts.
And you're going to graduate this year.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. That's the goal. No, I'm kidding. I will graduate.
Yeah. Very nice. Anything else this weekend going on?
We have a comedy show happening at the Back Bay Conference Center, and that's all improv on Thursday night from 8 to 9, and admission's $5. So that should be cool if you're into comedy.
Very nice. Very nice. Beautiful. Hey, by the way, I just got past this. Lauren Powers, who we've had on the show, by the way, I think she refers to herself as...
The most branded female bodybuilder.
The most branded female bodybuilder. I've heard her referred to herself as other things as well, though, Jill, no?
You may have. Yeah, there are many things.
Yeah, muscle goddess, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
She has her Beach Classic tomorrow, Sunday, and I'm looking this out at Oceanside. Where is this at? Oceanside Pier Bowl, 200 The Strand North in Oceanside, California.
That's right.
And, I think we were at her event last year.
Just this past year.
And it's actually an interesting event.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of female bodybuilders, a lot of male bodybuilders. They have various vendors at the facility and stuff. She puts on a really good show.
She does. It's
so,
very exciting. Lots of interesting characters, too.
Hey, there's Mike out in the other room, by the way. I think he's listening to the show. And I see that Metrix is one of the sponsors of the Lauren Powers show. Just want to give you a heads up on that. Mike and I go way back on the Metrix days, so we won't go there, will we? All right, that's great. Lauren Powers, congratulations. Jill, you're in the room. Healthy lifestyle tips. We were talking about sort of what the content should be today.
Yeah.
Given the nature of the two musicians we have coming in.
Right.
And we decided that you were going to focus on the therapeutic benefits of music.
Absolutely. So we know that music is very powerful. Whether we're aware of it actually or not, it affects our day. We're listening to it in our car, at home. We're using it to elicit certain moods because it is very very powerful at affecting our moods and emotions. So it's a powerful medium also for individuals who find it difficult to express their own moods, their own feelings. So they may listen to a song and hear lyrics and go, hey, that's exactly how I'm feeling. You know, and that means a lot to me. And they have a medium to communicate that.
Yeah.
So, you know, then it also we find that music is very motivating. It motivates us to exercise. Yeah. So when I teach yoga, I have different music than I have when I teach my cycling class. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't use the music in yoga that I do in cycling, so that would be...
Let me ask you, is there one song that you use in particular that helps you sort of de-stress?
You know, I have my meditation CDs that I use, and I have a number of them.
Great. And if you needed one to kind of pump you up for a Saturday night, is there a particular song?
There's not a particular song, although the Happy Song by Pharrell.
You like that one?
I think that is just like really happy.
That puts everybody in a good mood, right?
Very happy.
All right.
And so we also find that music can be relaxing. It can help us chill out. It's uplifting. It can induce sleep. It can also stimulate the romantic feelings.
Ooh.
I'm just saying that, you know, we don't know. It's for stress management for sure, and it's used for meditation, yoga, massage. They also find that people who are studying or want to read, there's music and a higher beat music and even classical music like Mozart helps them to comprehend more, to take it in more and to focus more. You also have to find that it is news for people who are going through women, who are going through labor pains of giving birth.
Yeah.
And then we actually do have an organization, the American Therapy Music Therapy Association, AMTA. And they actually have trained degreed people who will sit with individuals and decide what they're going through and what's right for them. They get into treating individuals more clinically who are going through depression. They're using it for dementia, Alzheimer's. And in that, they're finding more memory ability. In autism, they're helping children communicate easier. And then in recovery, they're using it for recovery and also depression. In that, what they do is it's not just listening to the music. They help them maybe create the music, talk about the music, and dance. Right, so just moving around and dancing.
Nice.
It's good for chronic pain and cancer. They find that people who are going through radiation treatments or chemotherapy, if they have music, they're tolerating it better. Their stress levels are reduced. When we come to addiction to alcohol, drugs, or other substances, there is the alcoholrehab.com, and they have found that music is an amazing tool. Not the only tool. You need the support of the professionals, but to get them through things that could be triggers that help them, that are going to have them relapse possibly.
Right.
So if they're feeling bored or anxious or lonely, they have music, and that helps them. They do have a contraindication of the music, though, which is that if there's music they're listening to, that might stimulate the thought of when they were using.
Oh.
So none of that music going
on. Got you.
Yeah, but overall, music is a very powerful medium for all of us.
Well, that's beautiful, by the way. Thank you for bringing that in. And that's going to be relevant to our conversation later because in the studio this morning we have John Batdorf and Bill Batstone, twin sons of a different mother or something with that last name. Very similar for both of you guys. But John Batdorf, of course, produced an album or two soundtracks to Recovery, one. And we'll talk a little bit about that later this morning. We're going to take a short, like a one and a half minute break. We're going to play one of John's songs. April, are you ready for this? The song titled One Day. And we're back in 90 seconds.
Troubles will be gone. joy that's here to stay. Let's make the best of things. I know we can get by. Try and keep our heads up
You're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is Radio Caravan. And actually, to be honest, we're scrambling here this morning trying to figure out the cameras and the microphones and the instruments and the amplifiers and all that sort of stuff. But that's why we love doing this particular show. It's all that excitement that's going on right now. Hey, in the studio this morning, as I mentioned before the break, for the third time, he's the only guest that we've had in here not once, not twice, but three times.
Whoa, right?
Yeah, exactly. is John Batdorf, who, as the duo Batdorf and Rodney, shared the stage with the likes of, wow, listen to this, Dan Fogelberg, Hall & Oates, Kris Kristofferson, Jackson Browne, Linda Ronstadt, Fleetwood Mac, and the Doobie Brothers, which, John, get on the mic so I can hear you as we chat a little bit, but that's a pretty impressive group of people you've performed with or for over the years, yeah?
Very inspirational to me as an artist.
Yeah.
You're a great artist, yes.
I also wanted to introduce Bill Batstone. And Bill, I'm not really sure the best way to sort of describe you. I know you're the worship leader.
Uh-huh. At, well, sort of.
Sort of?
I'm B, the B guy.
The B guy. Get on that mic for me. The B guy. What does the B guy mean? What does that mean?
No, I'm just, I kind of like watch the other guy's back.
Okay.
So
okay, that sounds
associate.
Great. At Harvest, for the Harvest
Fellowship in Riverside.
In Riverside.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then Irvine, too.
Yeah. And you've been a musician how long?
44 years.
44 years. And, you know, how did you...
I moved to Hawaii when I was in junior high, and my parents bought us ukuleles at Long's Drugstore in Ala Moana Shopping Center. And
I love the ukulele.
From then, I started liking Hawaiian music, and then the Beatles came out. And anyways, it's like a typical deal.
Nice. And some of the people you've played with before? Well, we almost had John go down here for a moment. Some of the people you played with before might have included?
Well, I went on the road and recorded with Richie Furay. The guy was in Buffalo Springfield.
Sure.
And Coco, and wrote a few songs for him. And,
good for you.
And involved, got to sing with some of his cohorts like Tim Schmidt and Randy Meisner and people like that.
Hey, April's got a big crush on Timothy B. Smith. Can you get a phone number for her?
No.
Can we
John
do that?
Sung with him too. John.
Oh, okay. Woo, well, okay, you guys can chat later
gifted.
About that.
He's gifted.
We'll definitely chat. I'll
He's
buy you breakfast.
Hey, and now you're heavily involved in the Christian music scene, right?
Right.
Okay, very nice. Yeah. John, let's start with, you know, we're here to chat about basically your career. And one of the songs you're going to play for us shortly, you wrote when you were 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Titled Let Me Go. But before we get there, John, how did you come to California and how did you sort of launch your career?
Well, I was actually following Bill Batstone. I was trying to get a band with him. It took me some 40 years. No, actually, I came out in 1967 when I was 15 years old. With a band for the summer, and we were going to try to get a record deal, and we actually did get a record deal with Atlantic, and the band ended up breaking up before the record was ever made. Long, long, way long. You need like a 3-hour show for that story. But I at that point, it's why I met Ahmet Erdogan, who was president of Atlantic Records, who had signed this band.
Right.
And the band broke up, and I knew that I could not go back to Ohio. I knew that I needed to be in California. Because the only thing I really know how to do better than a lot of people is sing, play, and write. And you know, I think I had more opportunity in Los Angeles than Beaver Creek.
Although Beaver Creek is beautiful.
Yes, it is a beautiful place, but yeah. Not a whole lot of record deals are made in Beaver Creek. So I convinced my mother that, you know, I would go to school and I would, you know, I live in a house that had food and electricity and all that stuff, in which none of it really happened. But she bought it enough that I was able to stay out there. And then...
So you move out 15 by yourself?
I moved with the band.
With the band?
With chaperoned band, yes.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and then, so when did you actually hook up with Mark Rodney then?
I met Mark Rodney when I turned 18. I was a musician, trying to record solo stuff because my band had broken up. And my girlfriend, who was a runaway from Las Vegas, I told her that I was working as a waiter for my day gig. And I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I have to do music. And so she goes, well, why don't you come to Las Vegas and move in, you know, with my parents?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's probably a great idea. I'm with their 15-year-old daughter. I'm 18.
Right, let's not go.
You know, it's like, and they're Jehovah's Witnesses, which is fine.
Oh, it's fine.
So
yeah.
I'm thinking, this is going to be a hit.
Yeah, nothing
for
wrong
sure,
with that.
Man. This is going to be great. So we moved back there, and it was a little tense at first, you know. I kind of had long hair, and you know, I kind of had the hippie.
You had the really long hair, and
I did,
the hippie
yes.
look and everything.
I did.
So you ran into Rodney out there?
Well, I started playing music at a coffee house on the campus of the University of Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And there was some really geeky-looking guy in the audience who kept saying he wanted to jam with me, you know? And
right.
I said, listen, I first of all, he's scary-looking. You know? So
I'm sure he'd love to hear that.
Oh, he knows it.
Oh, okay.
I told him, if there was ever a chance for him to be in the Planet of the Apes, he would be the guy who needed no makeup.
Oh, there you go.
He loved that. But he was kind of a child actor. But his father was Red Rodney, who was a jazz guitar player.
Right.
I mean, jazz trumpet player for Charlie Parker. He was the only white guy that was able to play with those guys.
Right.
So Mark had this jazz background. And eventually, I said, okay, let's jam. You know, I used to play some cover songs as well as originals. We played Down by the River.
Yeah.
And we kind of broke into this jam, and it was, all of a sudden, it was really pretty cool. It didn't seem so geeky then.
Right, yeah.
So,
funny how an instrument will make you feel look not so geeky,
yes,
huh?
Yes. I started looking at the guitar more than him.
Right.
So, we realized we kind of had something going because I had kind of a rock background.
Yeah.
He had kind of a jazz background, so I had all these songs that I'd been working on, and so we used to sit at Paradise Park in Las Vegas in 1970 and watch the 747s land, which was pretty remarkable,
right.
And we'd just play all day.
Wow.
And eventually we got so tight that we went back to Los Angeles and...
Signed a contract?
Well, I called Ahmet Erdogan on the whim that he'd be at the Beverly Hills Hotel, because that's where he stayed, not knowing if he was there or not, but he was there. And he invited us over, and it was in December of 1970, and he was just signing the Rolling Stones in the main room, and they put us back. It was funny, it was like a doctor's office. At the Beverly Hills Hotel, he had all these bedrooms, and each bedroom had an artist or a manager or an agent or somebody in there. So we went back in there, and we're sitting across from a lawyer, and I don't even know why we were in there with him. And he goes, what do you guys do? And we said, well, you know, we've got these original songs. We think we're really great. So he says, let's hear something. So we played some real stoner song called Oh, What a Lucky Day. And he goes, you might want to hit him with something a little harder out of the chute. So we said, okay, man. So we played Oh, My Surprise when Ahmet did come in. And
right.
He just jumped up in the air and started saying, I want to sign you guys. I want to take you to Muscle Shoals. And we had no idea what Muscle Shoals even meant.
Right.
And Ahmet went, and then I left the meeting with Mark. You know, Ahmet gave us $100 to go get something to eat, which was a lot of money for us.
Uh-huh.
And so as we're leaving, Mark goes, who was that guy? He had no idea who we were even playing
right.
for. I said, well, that was the president of Atlantic Records, and he wants to sign us.
That's amazing. And did he sign you then?
The next day.
The next day were signed?
They flew the lawyers out and contracts, and we had to actually go to court because we were 18.
Wow.
Because in California, you can't sign a contract.
You know, there are so many people in this country, musicians, who wish they had a story like that at 18 years old. You
it was
know?
Cool, man.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was the right. I mean, the thing is, no matter how young we were ready.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter how old you are. You know, when you're, I mean, look at Michael Jackson when he's five. You look at
right.
the guy, you go.
Well, that's true.
He's, well, why wait?
Yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
We were like, we were so tight and we were so enthusiastic and we loved playing so much. And it was time. And when you hear back at those records, I mean, because we were so young and now look at kids that are 18 and 19 years old.
Right.
They look like they're, you know, seven.
Yeah.
And here we were down with these Muscle Shoals guys who were some of the greatest musicians on the planet playing this little studio in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And it doesn't sound like kids, man. I mean, yeah. we were really mature for the age.
Mature for the age. And so at 18, off your first album, you wrote a song called Let Me Go.
Yes, I did.
And, you know, I asked you to come in and start with this song for two reasons. One, it was off your first album.
It was.
You wrote it when you were 18 years old. And I just think the guitar work is really quite phenomenal.
Well, thanks.
And so you want to give us a little taste of Let Me Go?
Yeah, a little story on that, if you don't mind.
No, please. Yeah, absolutely.
We'd finished the album and gone back to L.A., and I got a call from Amit a few months later. And he said, you know, I really like the album, but I think we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh gosh, so what do you need? He goes, I need you to write some more songs. And he goes, I don't want you to try to write hits. I just want you to write something that you really feel. So,
yeah.
You know, I just turned 19, so I had a full lifetime to draw upon. I wrote three songs. I wrote this song, I wrote Don't You Hear Me Callin', and Me and My Guitar,
beautiful.
Which became the last three songs on
interesting.
Off the Shelf.
Very interesting, yeah.
So anyway.
John Batdorf, Let Me Go.
This is the abbreviated version because it is such a long song.
Right.
So and my buddy Bill here, who has been gracious enough to fill in where Rodney used to fill in. But
mm-hmm.
This is for Mark.
This is for Mark.
All right, this is
I'm
for
sure
Mark
he's
Rodney.
He's listening too.
Yeah, yeah right. Love that song. Bill, you got a big smile on your face. What's going on over there?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just trying to remember how it goes. Hey, can we punch in the last bar 32?
Sure, yeah, we'll
fix it in post.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. And, you know, it's just, I love that song. And, you know, look, we've chatted before, and You know, my older brother used to take me up to see McCabe's guitar shop up there. And where is that? Santa Monica?
It's in Santa Monica. Yes,
Santa Monica. Cool little stopover that people would go, kind of like the Marine Room downtown here. And you guys were on stage with those long hairs. And, I mean, you look like druggies up there. I'm not suggesting you were druggies. I'm just saying that, you know, you sort of had that look up there. But I remember always going and just being completely impressed with the songwriting, the guitar playing, the vocals, the harmonies, you know, Mark Rodney's lead guitar, which
great.
added a great. Whole new dimension to your songs.
Not to mention we had Rick Carlos play bass with us there a few times.
Did you really?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. So I'm going to go through another song because I want to try to get in as much music as we can this morning, and though we'll chat in between the songs. But off your second album now, you have the song titled Home Again.
Yeah, can you give me a second?
Yeah, I'll get you a second here.
It's time to talk to Bill.
Okay, Bill, let's talk.
Uh-oh.
Look at that guitar.
Bill,
he has.
What do we got? What kind of guitar we got going there?
It's a Taylor AB1 acoustic bass guitar.
And why do you play a Taylor AB1 acoustic bass?
Somebody gave it to me.
No.
Because you can.
No, listen to this thing. It sounds glorious.
I just don't know where the rest of the strings are.
Anyway, it's sort of a mariachi sort of take off, I guess.
Do you prefer, are you a bass player primarily?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, but you also play guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And you harmonize?
I do.
Yeah, and are you a lead guitarist or rhythm guitarist?
You know, ish.
Ish?
Ish. Yeah. I'm going to work on it with John because we're going to do some gigs where I need to learn a lot of Mark's parts, and I'm going to work on that, and I assume I'll be able to do it. So.
Yeah. Did you and Mark write those sort of lead tracks yourself, or was that sort of Mark kind of figuring it out as you're playing your songs? Or
you know, it worked a lot of different ways.
Yeah, okay.
Lots of times, I mean, back in that era, we didn't have multiple track machine, so I used to record a song of mine on a two-track, and I would play along with it.
Yeah.
And once I had kind of a concept, I would call in Mark, because I wrote all the stuff.
Right.
And he'd come in and he sometimes would play what I played, but sometimes he'd come up with some really great parts.
Yeah. All right, very nice. So we're tuning the guitar, which, by the way, we love on live radio is when musicians come in and tune the guitar.
It's great, you know, and we tune because we care.
Yeah. Okay, good. Right. But I want you to be tuned. I don't want you to play until you're ready, so take your time.
Yeah, some guys don't really care so much about it. I mean, when you think about it, it hasn't hurt the Rolling Stones at all.
We had a guy in here, he was completely out of tune. It didn't bother him one bit.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, because when you sing out of tune, it doesn't matter.
That's true. All right, you ready for this?
Close.
All right, let me know when you're ready. This is off your second album.
It is.
The second album was titled Batdorf and Rodney. And these albums, by the way, are still available online, yes?
Actually, no.
Oh.
But what I've done, I put a compilation CD together of all three albums.
Nice.
Because, yeah, it's just a long story.
Okay.
Trying to get your rights back to your music and
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
And then is a nightmare.
Right.
So I just thought I would undo the nightmare and release the record. There's a record called Portfolio.
Okay.
It has not only all three Batdorf and Rodney albums, all the songs I wrote, which is like 90% of the things.
Yeah.
It also has two songs from the group Silver, which was a follow-up to Batdorf and Rodney.
Right.
And I found a tape that I had recorded in 1973 with three demos on it that had never come out and were meant to be on Batdorf and Rodney records. For some reason, they never did. So we actually had to bake the tapes because the tapes were so old because they'll just deteriorate.
Literally bake them.
Yes, you bake them. You put them in
350.
Yes. And you get about one swipe of it after that. Then you digitize it.
Wow, how interesting.
That's incredible.
So it was a little bit squirrely.
Yeah.
And so I digitize it, and I added just some guitars just to raise the fidelity, because the fidelity was quarter inch, 3 3/4 speed, which isn't like the top of the ladder when you're listening to audio. So.
Yeah. But are these songs on this album, are these re-recorded songs?
No, these are the original recordings.
These are original recordings. Great. Okay, here we go.
All right, here we go.
Home Again, John Batdorf. Thank you.
was cloudy.
guys. Beautiful. There's a lot going on in that song, I'll tell you right now.
You got that right.
You know, Bill, you're playing that bass like it's a lead guitar.
Ow.
Yeah, John, I think you told me before you have perfect pitch. I think your voice
is... I do not.
You do not?
I think that would be a curse.
Oh, okay. Well, nonetheless, man, your voice keeps getting stronger year after year after year.
Incredible.
And the harmonies were right on.
Oh.
Yeah, very nice, Bill.
Some of those are really close.
Yeah, some of them are. Yeah, it's getting there.
Okay, you know, I feel like we got to get through this as quickly as we can because we only got about 20 minutes left. And I was going to take a break, but I'm going to avoid taking a break for a moment. Yeah. And so I want to talk a little bit about sort of post, you know, you had a couple of hits. With the Bettdorf and Rodney, we talked about those a little earlier. Okay. You Are a Song. You wrote a song later. You sort of got out of the Bettdorf Rodney years, and you kind of became a solo artist.
I did.
And you moved to composing such shows as Touched by an Angel, Promised Land, and you've been a full-time singer-songwriter your entire life.
Yes, pretty much. I've been writing and creating music for, you know, whatever would come to me. And one thing, I've always been a very hard worker.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to become a really good music composer because when I got the gig, I'd done some composing, but never to network TV. And it taught me an even better work ethic. And but really I've done so many cool things. I mean, I've just been completely blessed to have been able to, like, have a dream when I was a kid and be able to live it out.
Yeah.
But was last year when Adele was up for the Oscar for Let the Sky Fall, I got to sing on the Oscars.
It was on stage, live.
Absolutely so cool. I was
how
so nervous.
Exciting.
And even
were you nervous?
I was so nervous. Because there was 30 guys singing background.
Yeah.
And I thought when the song was over, just don't fall down when you walk off. Just don't be that guy.
Yeah. But was that sort of a highlight for you?
I got to tell you, it was when we were standing behind these crystal curtain things were there. And when they hit the house lights, and we were like right behind the band. It was this Kodak moment that if we took pictures, we'd be killed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll never forget that thing. It was absolutely remarkable.
Were viewers able to discern your voice from all the other 50 guys?
Oh, I made sure I was leading.
Well, I don't think so. All right. Hey, you also wrote a song that America recorded titled You Could Have Been the One. April, is this available for a quick little taste of... This is a song John Bettdorf wrote that America, the band America, recorded.
I got to give you a little background.
Yeah, please, go.
This is the music business, there is no plan, as you know.
Right.
I was making demos at the time. My manager, Burl Heckman, had a meeting with someone about trying to get me a deal. And so I just ended a demo, and You Could Have Been the One was one of the main songs on there. And so in the next room was Matt McCauley and Mullen. They were producing America, and they were looking for material. And through the wall, they heard my demo playing, and there was a knock on the door. Hey, that song we just heard, is this song available? They were there, and the other chair, the other guy was really ticked off because he was trying to get them songs. And they found one through the wall, which is pretty hilarious.
That is, yeah.
Well, okay. You used to tour with America, right?
Yeah, we did.
Did you?
Silver did, yeah.
Oh, wow. Were you in Silver?
Nope.
No? Oh, okay. Yeah. April, let's get a little taste of that song here, written by John Bettdorf. You Could Have Been the One, performed by America.
Oh, yeah. There's a bright light, it's shining in your veins. You can't even see me at all. You look like an angel out of place at this downtown devil's bar. Do you want to dance, girl? You say no, thanks, and I watch you drift away. Well, you had your chance. You could have been the one tonight. You could. Say yes, but it's a loser.
losing game I'm trying to win, and I can only guess. Do you have somebody
Okay, by the way, you're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan. And in the studio this morning, we have singer-songwriter John Batdorf and his partner. I'm going to call you his partner for the moment, Bill Batstone. And that song was a song that John wrote that was eventually performed by America.
I wrote that with Sue Sheridan when I was a staff writer at the entertainment company back in, God, who knows, 1980, maybe?
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful song, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Who's that, Jerry Beckley singing
yes,
that
was,
song?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got a, yeah, I love his songs. And, of course, America's been around forever. I think they're playing in the Coach House coming up in December.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we've reached out to try to get him in the studio. I hope it works. We'll see. Okay, so we talked a little bit about your career with Batdorf and Rodney. We kind of breezed through very quickly your years composing for television. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you continue to be a singer-songwriter. You've done several albums with this irrepressible guy named James Lee Stanley. He's quite a character. And the albums are titled All Wood and Stones.
I'm surprised he's not here, actually.
I know. All Wood and Stones. How many albums have you done? One, two, and three? I don't know.
No, we did two.
You did two?
We did one... And that was in 2004, which actually got me back into recording again. I just finished up the TV work.
Yeah.
And I got a call out of the blue from James, who I hadn't seen since, like, 73.
Yeah.
And you know, it was amazing. I didn't recognize him because he dyes his hair gray now. So I was like, we had this idea, and I said, well, I have a little bit of time. We'll try it. So we picked 11 early Rolling Stones songs, really the ones with Brian, when Brian Jones was still alive. Because they were more poppy back then.
Yeah.
And we made this album that really came out really good, and we started getting lots of airplay. And then eventually we went to go on the road, and I said, listen, man, if we go on the road, we need another guy, and I know the guy.
Yeah.
That's Bill Batstone.
Yeah. Well, geez, obviously he's got great talent.
Oh, we met... through Richie Furay, who I know from Yellow Springs, Ohio, where he was born.
Oh.
He was in a band with Richie, and he was actually in a band in, was it 83, 82?
Something. Yeah, 81, something. Yeah, 82. Right.
Somewhere in the 80s.
And they were gonna put out an album with Atlantic, and Richie decided he didn't want to do it. Hmm. So they were managed by my old manager, John Hartman and Harley Goodman. John asked me if I wanted to come in and maybe meet Bill and maybe take Richie's place. So we've been, friends for a bazillion years. And
very nice. Back to James Lee Stanley and the All Wood and Stones. Here we go. So basically, what's the concept of the albums? Just brief us on the concept of the albums.
Well, it's the concept kind of is what if Mick and Keith would have been born in California.
Is that sort of how you pitched it to each other?
Because it's kind of like, it's like Crosby, Stills and Nash meets Rolling Stones.
Beautiful. All right, great. And you're going to play Ruby Tuesday, I think you mentioned?
Yeah, that was actually my favorite song. And I thought that was such a great, one of the great hooks of all time.
Yeah.
So we'll do a little abbreviated version. And since they don't have a bridge, it's okay.
Okay, you got it.
This is actually the first song we recorded for the album.
Great.
Where she came from.
Beautiful, wow. Guys. Woo! Beautiful.
It's a great song. Man.
It is a great song. Yeah,
great,
you know, it's
song.
I think it's an underappreciated song too. It's not one. If you ask me, you know, the top Rolling Stones songs that I enjoyed, that wouldn't have come up necessarily. But now that you've played it,
well, you know what? Back when they put that record out, they were actually competing with the Beatles as a mm-hmm. pop band.
Yeah.
So that these wrote really some really great choruses. I mean, Keith.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's done it, but right. I mean, he's a master craftsman as far as, you know, arrangements and putting things together.
Were you more influenced by the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, would you say?
I thought the Rolling Stones were nothing compared to the Beatles. Because huh. I loved the perfection of those records. Those records,
the Beatles,
the time,
now. Oh, yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
And people ask me, man, how come you don't do an all wooden, you know, like a Beatles thing? I go,
right.
Why?
Yeah, that'd be,
it
that'd
was
be,
already great.
Yeah.
You can't make great better.
Yeah.
But the Rolling Stones, because, you know, the way they were just kind of this jive, you know, maybe tune up after three or four songs
yeah.
kind of band. You could do something to those songs and make them different.
Yeah.
What would you do to In My Life?
Right.
Besides do it like they did it.
No,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Mike and Richard are out there listening, and I think one of them, I forget who, suggested that one of your major influences as a guitar player was Stephen Stills. Is that true?
It's very true. As a matter of fact, when I came to California, I was a keyboard player. I played Wurlitzer Electric Piano.
Huh.
Which is the piano they used on Summer in the City and Reflections. It was a really cool old brown speckled thing. It was great.
Uh-huh.
And I was out here with the band, and then the Springfield came out. And then
Buffalo Springfield. Gotcha.
Yes. I just call them the Springfield.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And then I heard, they had For What It's Worth, that was cool
yeah.
and everything. And they came out with Bluebird.
Oh,
and
man.
This guitar solo, I went, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden it was like acoustic guitar can really rock.
Right.
And I just went with it. I said, you know, I'm selling the piano thing and the gear, and I'm getting an acoustic guitar.
Well, good for you, man. It's done you well. You also did a concept album recently with Michael McLean.
Yes, I did.
Titled Soundtracks to Recovery. And, of course, Jill was mentioning earlier that she believes music can bring about therapeutic change. Can you describe briefly the concept behind the album, Soundtracks to Recovery?
Well, it actually is. It's going to be hard to do it briefly, but
okay.
it was all created because one of my sons had become an addict.
Oh.
And this was back almost 10 years ago. And everything we tried to reach him was not working. And I knew that when I was a kid, I learned a lot about life, and, you know, and being a man and picking the right path through great songwriters, because I didn't have parents around. So I thought, well, what if we wrote a song that maybe we could reach out to him and maybe it would do something, maybe it would break a barrier down or something. And actually it did. It kind of opened this door that wasn't there before. So it was so successful, and now my son is fine. But we thought that we should continue on and do this because it was so helpful to him. So we went out and we wrote a bunch of songs and went out and played in front of all these addicts. And it was, the response was so remarkable that we thought we have to do this. And we tried to get funding through Kickstarter and they wouldn't do it because it was a cause. They didn't want to support a cause. And then I read about them supporting someone who had recorded Manson in prison. They were going to put out that record. I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
So we actually, you know, we paid for it ourselves. And now we're just actually getting a website together. It should be up any day. It's called 2recovery.org. And it's going to talk about the whole record and have
Beautiful.
Music there.
You said you performed in front of 500 or 800 people at one sitting?
Yes, it was unbelievable. We didn't know if you know we were just blowing smoke up our own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, you know, and really in order to test this out, because we worked with in my family, we have to play for people who don't know us and there's no connection or anything. And so we went on stage and played for all these strangers. And it was so incredible. People said, "We where can we get this album?" We said, "Well, we haven't made it."
Hmm.
And people waited like an hour to talk to us and
wow.
talk about how much the music meant to them. So we were just in Seattle, Michael McLean and myself. It was Recovery Month in September, and we played for a bunch of different things, and they were all so mind-boggling to me, and so it's just so eye-opening. And you know, you think you kind of know about life until you actually see it from a perspective like that and what these people have gone through. And I know some of it is self-induced, but the stories are hard to take home sometimes.
Right.
Just remarkable.
That's beautiful, John. Nice work on that.
My pleasure.
Hey, you know, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, we got about 4 minutes left. And, you know, it's... Did you want to play a song, by the way? A brief little song off the soundtrack album? Hey, which one do you want to play?
I'm going to play the song that we thought that if we made a record and we were singing about how powerful music was, we had to tell them that it was powerful and meant enough to us. So I wrote this song.
I love
it. I woke up one day and thought, this will work. It's called Ain't Dead Yet.
Very... Okay, nice.
So we've played this three times, so maybe the fourth time is the right one. Ready?
John Batdorf.
One, two, three, four. I play guitar. I like that best. I'm not a star. Oh, but I've been blessed. I sing real high. Some days I wonder why am I this guy, and what has all this meant? I share these tunes straight from the heart, and pretty soon you'll know your part in the refrain. Songs, I'm passing them along because I heard them first. So when your soul needs fixing and your life's a contradiction and you're burning down like a cigarette, I got songs for addiction or any old affliction, some tunes to help you with your regret. What to remember, what to forget, 'cause you ain't dead yet. Something more. It's not to steer this ship to shore or rescue those who'd rather leave. 'Cause I'm part of this crew, I'm in this boat with you, 'cause I've always believed that when your soul needs fixing and your life's a contradiction and you're burning down like a cigarette, I got songs for addiction or any old affliction, some tunes to help you with your regret. What to remember, what to forget, 'cause you ain't dead yet. And maybe you're wondering if this could really help. Remember, I'm saying for you and for myself. 'Cause when my soul needs fixing and my life's a contradiction and I'm burning down like a cigarette, I got songs for addiction or any old affliction, some tunes to help you with your regret. What to remember, what to forget. So if you get that feeling when you hear me singing, we're not strangers but friends that haven't met. Well, it's the same back at ya. Hope I'm gonna catch ya humming along throughout my set. This is my intro to what you get, 'cause you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet.
Beautiful. Woo. Guys. Very nice, John. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Song, man.
Thank you very much.
Hey, John, real quickly, we got 30 seconds. Where can people find you online?
You can find johnbatdorfmusic.com, and you can also find me at tworecovery.org, which now you can sign up, and we'll let you know when that website's up. I want to tell you, I don't know when this is going to air, but...
Well, it's airing live now. Okay. You mean the cable version?
I will be at McCabe's on November 22nd with Bill.
Oh.
Sharing the bill
Boulevard
with
Music.
Jack Timpchen. Yes, what did I say?
Boulevard Music.
Boulevard Music, yes.
Oh, okay. Sharing the stage with Jack Tamption.
Yes.
Who was in our studio not too long ago.
That's why I brought it up.
I appreciate that. We did a concert with him downstairs. It was spilling over into the streets, you know. Very interesting guy. Great storyteller.
Yes.
Quite a personality. Yeah. Hey, we got to roll. You've been listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is Radio Caravan. You've been in the studio listening to John Batdorf and Bill Batstone.
Yeah.
April, take us out of here. All right. Oh, your song. All right. Take us off the mic.
I am feeling low, when everything starts moving slow, and everything I do seems to go wrong. That's when I run straight to you, 'cause that's where skies are always blue, and music plays the whole night through, 'cause love, you are a song. As long as I'm with you,